call this meeting to order and have the Pledge of Allegiance if you stand, please.
Okay.
Attention. Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Okay, roll call, please, Kay.
Commissioner Clements.
Here.
Chavez.
Here.
Barker. Cisneros. Chairman Nord.
Here. Okay, first on the agenda is election of officers. Normally done in July. I guess now we're in August, so is it appropriate we do without the other two here?
I'd just wait. I'd make a motion to table it until we're all present, if we can get that to happen.
Second that motion.
That's a good idea. Okay, motion and second. Any further comment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed nay. Okay.
I think we postponed last year, didn't we, till late in the game, too, in the fall?
Yeah. Okay, we got a public comment section. If anyone would like to speak in relation to anything relevant to this commission that is not on the agenda, now's your time. Okay, hearing none, we'll go to the consent agenda, which is 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sets of minutes. Do we need to do them individually?
As Commissioner Chavez is going to abstain from, is it one set?
Three.
I suggest separating them into the ones that you can vote on, that Commissioner Chavez can vote on, and then the others can vote on in two separate batches. But they don't need to be individual.
Okay, so that would be the number three there. That's the only one you can't vote on?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, we'll look at minutes from November 1 of 2007. Any comments or changes to this? Okay, I'd entertain a motion then for number three.
Move for approval.
I would second that. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oops. I guess I'm supposed to call on you. Okay, we don't want to. Okay, roll call, please.
Commissioner Nord.
Yes.
Commissioner Clements.
Yes.
Commissioner Chavez.
Abstain.
Okay, and then the other five sets there from April 2 to June of 2009. Any corrections or additions there?
Not that I can see. That's where we miss Donna. I'd move for approval of that, those five items.
Second.
Okay, we got a motion and a second. Any further comment? Roll call, please.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Chavez?
Yes.
Nord?
Yes. Okay, and then we have a public hearing. Zone Ordinance Amendment 2009-1, the City of Ridley Municipal Code, relating to second units. So we have a staff report, and then we will have a public hearing after that.
Thank you, Chairman and Commissioners. Before you, is a recommendation for a zoning ordinance amendment pertaining to the construction of second dwelling units in all residential districts, both single-family residential districts and multifamily residential districts. And it's brought before you by staff to bring our zoning ordinance into compliance with state law. Specifically, laws coming from Department of Housing and Community Development related to affordable housing and equitable housing. Our current zoning ordinance is more restrictive in several ways than is permissible by state law, following changes through Assembly Bill 1866. And what this ordinance amendment will be doing is removing a requirement for a conditional use permit for second units and also modifying the development standards in several areas. With the amendment, second dwelling units will become a by right use that will be processed at staff level, just as you would a single family dwelling on a single family lot. Each request for to build a second dwelling unit would be reviewed by staff for compliance with proposed development standards. They will be required to obtain building permits. They will be required to pass inspections for compliance with all state and federal building codes. They will pay development impact fees, they'll pay utility fees, and your recommendation today will be forwarded on to the city council. The ordinance amendment is exempt from CEQA review, and staff recommends that you approve, recommend approval of zoning ordinance amendment 2009-1, subject to the findings contained in resolution 2009-4. If you'd like to go through the zoning ordinance amendment a little bit, again, it's repealing one section that's requiring a conditional use permit. It is of note to the commission, one of the standards that we can include is a requirement for a recordation of a covenant that states that one of the units has to be occupied by the owner of record. That will be a requirement. So if you own a house today, you can meet the development standards. One requirement will be that you record on the property that you will live in one of the two units. So you can't go out, pick up property, build second units, and have a stable of 20 first and second units that you rent out. You, as an individual property owner, can live in a unit and build one that can be rented.
Flip-flop places?
Sure. You're not either you're one of the two units. You could live in the larger or the smaller unit. The development standards include some floor area, lot coverage, setback standards for the specific zone district. Off-street parking requirements have been slightly modified, and architectural design. And we state that it should be compatible with regard to landscaping, color, material, design on the exterior. And as an example, we just recently processed a site plan review application for a duplex. That's a staff level review where it includes a carport. And in the past, we have been seeing carports that are standard sheet metal carport with 4x4 posts. We're using a similar provision that says the architectural design needs to be compatible with certain surrounding uses. And we're requiring that the carport have a pitched roof structure similar to the house and use similar composition shingle material and similar paint. So we do have the authority to implement in certain things. Requiring a use permit for the second unit is the primary thing that's being removed.
Did you say that the owner must live in one of these is included in what we have in front
Correct.
Of us? I read through this.
That would be, if you look through resolution 2009-4, Exhibit A, it's under, it's on page 2 of 6 of that resolution. It's 10-6-D-4-B, and it's requiring that an instrument be recorded against the property and included, and that instrument is going to address all of the development standards, but of note is that it also includes a requirement that one of the units be occupied by the owner of record.
Okay.
This has been, I think you're a bit familiar with it. I think it's been coming for quite a while. AB 1866 was actually under scrutiny, I think, in 2003, approved, and I believe the laws included took effect in July of 2006. So we've taken our time getting to this point, but it's something we need to get addressed and make sure that our ordinance is in compliance.
Okay, question. This is primary, or the owner of the property has to be a resident only during the time of construction?
No. So when you, that needs to be their residence. So when you go to sell that property, anybody interested in purchasing that property is going to have to want to live there and then have a rental on site. They could seek to modify the structure so it's no longer a second unit, but I don't think that it's going to be as common as people are concerned about. Not every property is going to be able to accommodate a second unit based on the development standards. Where you have alleys, that would be pretty accommodating. In neighborhoods where homes are built to the setback lines on the side yards, there's not a whole lot of opportunity to get a second unit in because you can't get to the back of the property to build parking. If you've got an alley, you'll have that opportunity. If you're on a corner, you'll have that opportunity. But, for example, on my home, I have a large enough lot that I could fit a second unit, but my home is built to the side yards. So there's no opportunity to get back to where that open area is to build a second unit because I couldn't provide the parking. So this doesn't mean that everybody's got... you have the right to build a second unit provided you can meet our development standards. And our standards that are included in here will be compliant with state law. We're not being too restrictive. That doesn't mean everybody is going to have the ability to build a second unit.
So you would have to have an additional parking space.
Correct. If you'd like to go through the parking requirements specifically.
No, I'm fine. So that's what I'm trying to get clear in my mind because, you know, I brought up here at the commission level before that there's a mother-in-law's quarters back behind my residence and over one property. And I think that property sold in the last 2 years, and there's no doubt in my mind it's being rented out, but I think the front one's being rented out too, and there is not an additional parking. At that time, it wasn't required. Now, like with, say, your parcel, for example, because I'm familiar with it, lived in that neighborhood years back, could you drop, you know, crane over a small mobile that was like what do they call those, George? They're like RVs, but they're a park model, and put it on a foundation where you could actually pump the concrete over, put it on a foundation. Could you put a park model in the backyard if you had sufficient room to put a parking space back there?
If you can meet building code requirements, you can put a mobile home on a permanent foundation. You can put
okay.
a modular home or a
right.
prefab home on a permanent foundation. It's going to have to meet all building code requirements.
Okay.
You could do that provided you can meet the parking requirement.
Okay.
You still need to provide the additional parking space.
Off-street parking.
And I'll run through it quickly
so
we're all clear. If you're building a studio or a one-bedroom second dwelling unit, you need to provide one additional parking space. For two or more bedrooms in that second unit, you've got to provide two parking spaces. You can provide... for the second unit, the parking spaces in tandem. We don't normally count parking spaces that are in tandem, where one parks behind the other. We will allow that for this unit, but for the second unit, but not behind the parking for the primary unit. So you can't simply have a two-car garage, and the two-car garage is providing your two parking stalls for your primary unit, and then you say, now I want to provide two parking stalls for my second unit behind my garage. That won't be permissible. If you have additional space and access in your front, if you can line two parking stalls in tandem, that would be acceptable.
So you could modify the front yard landscape.
Correct, yep. but there are limitations to that also, and that would be I believe it's 75% of the front yard setback. We've tried to take into consideration all the different scenarios where you're going to be looking at opportunities to provide parking. And we don't want to accommodate the entire front yard becoming a parking lot. That's not permissible. If you're in a larger neighborhood where you have a three-car garage and you've got excess parking for your standard home, we will have to allow you to use the third-car garage and that tandem parking behind it to meet your second unit requirements. So,
tandem parking provided it doesn't extend
behind
the two
primary. Correct. It has to be on the driveway.
And this manufactured home, does it have to match material-wise with the existing structure?
Correct. And that's not addressed in this, specifically in this second unit ordinance. That's already addressed in our zoning ordinance.
Okay.
We already have provisions to allow you to permit modular or prefab or mobile home development. It's not very common because we require it to be put on a foundation. We require it to have architecture that matches. So when it becomes not a very cost-effective idea. We do get quite a few inquiries. When it's all said and done, it doesn't seem very cost-effective, and people generally go with standard construction. We do have a few around the community.
Yeah, there's one by Washington School on 13th Street.
I remember that one.
Yeah, right.
Came through here, didn't it?
Maybe.
There was one over in that area,
yeah.
I think, at one time.
It's right there on the south side of... 13th Street, between J and K.
Okay, you will...
So it's not going to work on
on our minimum 6,000 square foot lots that are on the east side of town, there just isn't sufficient room to put one of these in the backyard, probably.
Generally, no, where you don't have a large lot, a wide lot, you won't have an opportunity to get back to any location where you have additional space to build something. And on some of the older lots, older subdivisions that have smaller homes on them where you have a lot of green area on the property, you have situations where people tended to site their home in the center of the lot. So you've got a lot of square footage in the front, you got a lot of square footage in the back, but there isn't a place that allows you to get a second unit in and meet all your parking, and it'll be unfortunate. We see those things quite often in the multifamily districts where people are trying to build a duplex, but they've got a home built in the center of the lot, and it's not cost effective to remove it, and it and there's no opportunity for them to squeeze something else in.
Constrained by that.
So we answered all your questions. You will have to have a public hearing today.
Yes, because we should have our public hearing.
Big public.
Okay, we've heard our staff report. We're going to open this for public hearing. If there's anyone who would like to speak in favor or against this action, now is your time to speak. Okay, hearing none, we'll close the public hearing portion and come back to commissioners for questions and comments related to this, if there are still some. Could a developer, let's say of a new subdivision, put this kind of unit in to one or more, to one or all lots in a subdivision, theoretically?
Theoretically, they could if they'll comply with these standards.
Yeah.
Meaning they wouldn't be able to build tract homes and then offer them for sale, because we're going to require the covenant be in place when it's built. We're not going to issue the permit until the covenant is prepared and recorded. So you can't...
Which in essence is a promise
that speculation.
The owner-occupied...
Correct. So if a developer wants to coordinate that for a property owner and market that as an amenity, they would definitely be able to do that. They wouldn't be able to build them and then market them, because we're going to require that a property owner record a covenant against that. When a subdivision's built, all the properties are owned by the developer. They're obviously not going to occupy the home, so they're not going to be able to satisfy a covenant that says, I'm going to occupy the home and rent the other unit.
But if you custom build, I mean, let's say custom, and that's not the right word, but if you pre-sold a home before it was built.
And coordinating all of that, that would be...
Coordinating that, you could do that.
That would be permissible.
That would qualify then for...
I believe that it could. If somebody wanted...
That could be an attractive...
Whether it's a tract home developer or a custom home builder that wants to coordinate that for the homeowner, I think that could be accommodated. Most likely, the homeowner's not going to build the house themselves anyway. It's going to be a contractor that does it for them, so it would just be another nuance to that process.
You know, you may want to get your kids out of the house and put them in the backyard.
Well, I think we do need to be open-minded that it's from certain perspectives, a good thing. It's greater land efficiency. It's going to help us with greenhouse gas emissions reductions numbers and reporting. It's going to help us with affordable housing numbers.
That's it, right there.
So it's not, I haven't gauged whether or not you're concerned that it's a good or a bad thing, but there are pros and cons this is one way to get additional density without multifamily. This is still considered single family development. It's just a second unit. In the multifamily districts where they have a by right multiple units, they can put in a duplex or a triplex, they can opt to build a second dwelling unit and record a covenant against it and live on that property. That'll be a by right use. If they want to have 2 and 3 and 4 dwellings, they'll go through the standard site plan review process, but they won't be required to record that covenant. So this is going to apply to the R16 zone districts where it's single family. You'll have to follow these rules to build a second unit. It's also an option for the RM2 district where in some of the older neighborhoods you have RM2 zoning, but it's predominantly single-family homes on those parcels. They'll have an opportunity to build a second dwelling unit where they're going to live in one, rent the other, but they'll have to record the covenant. Or they can go through the site plan review process where they're building two rental units and they have no intention of living there.
And is that then the process that they would have to go through if they change residency, if they move away from their primary residence, if they no longer live there?
That would be an option in the multifamily district. It would not be an option in the single family district.
What happens at that point then?
When a property owner has a single family home and has built a second dwelling unit and has recorded a covenant that says, it specifically says, provide constructive notice to all future owners of the property of the second unit use restrictions. So it applies to the person that owns it, but it's also for all future owners. So when you get a title report, when you're interested in purchasing this home with the second dwelling unit on it, you've got notice that says it comes with this restriction. So if you don't want to purchase a home that has a second dwelling unit, that you have to live in one, but you can rent the other, you're going to make a choice. And if you can say, yes, that's the home I want to buy, but I don't care for the second dwelling unit rules, you can come in, convert it to a
game room.
What we call it. It could be a game room, it could be a pool house, it could be a guest house.
Guest house, yeah.
And the real distinction between the two are kitchen facilities. Yeah. If you've got a kitchen in the unit, it's a dwelling unit. At what point does something become a dwelling unit? When it's got a kitchen in it.
Does it speak to the situation I mentioned before? Let's say you get a kid up at the college age and he wants to live there. He wants to have a roommate, whatever. But I don't charge him rent.
If you have a guest house, you can have your guests can stay back there. If you have a second dwelling unit and you've recorded this instrument that says, I have to live in one, whether you want to let your children live in it, your mother-in-law live in it, or your children and their friends live in it, the city can't restrict that. Provided it's not overcrowded based on criteria coming from the building division that I'm not knowledgeable on, whoever lives in there is not something we can really regulate. We can regulate that if you're going to build a second dwelling unit, you need to live in one of them.
What's the recourse the city has if a person does that and then leaves or moves out?
And rents
both units? If you're in violation of a covenant, then what happens?
We would send code enforcement out there and inform them of the issue and from there start talking with the city attorney's office about what's the recourse.
If the city wants to pursue it? Or?
Do we not provide utilities, depending on the situation, and it's not spelled out in here because we have different situations throughout the community, whether or not we're going to put a second meter on it or not. But the city has control on whether or not you're going to provide utilities. And if somebody's in violation, land use violation, that's one recourse. You don't provide utilities, turn the water off. So that could be an option.
Let's say I'm a owner, just for sake of argument, and I have my children live in the first house, and then the second house is rented, and I buy another home and move away. Is that still considered, you know, if I'm the owner of title, but my kids are living there, is that not, I mean?
That's not what the intent is, that the owner of record live there. So a simple solution might be you put your children on the title. Then that would be in compliance.
How many of these do you think we have in town at this point? Do you have any idea? I realize they're living under a different...
I've been in the planning department for 15 years. I don't recall ever processing a conditional use permit for a second dwelling unit. Because as I stated in the beginning of the staff report, it's very restrictive. It restricted it to a 640 square foot attached unit. It's not a very practical unit, so there hasn't been anybody that's interested in doing it. Throughout the community where you have RM2 districts, quite a few second units have been built, but not under second units, under a duplex or two single-family units on the same site, as is permitted by right. And oftentimes, it's the owner lives in one and they rent the other. They're not required to do that. That's just what they've chose to do. We do have a few guest homes that have been built throughout the community that have been built without kitchen facilities.
So that's probably what that is behind me.
Probably what it started out as.
Yeah.
Can't tell you what it's being used for. that is a concern we always have with the request for a guest house or a pool house.
Right.
Those are clear candidates for conversion. And there's a provision in this ordinance amendment that calls for conversion of a guest house. So where we have that situation that you described, where there's what was built as a guest house now is being used as an illegal dwelling unit, this could allow that to come into compliance. If you can meet all these development standards...
And the owner lives in one of them.
Then we can bring that into compliance with state law and with our local ordinance.
Cool.
Danny, just your experience and opinion, this isn't really, and like you mentioned, it's not very common or to pursue it under this avenue or this way of...
This was AB 1866, I think, several years old.
Mm-hmm. Many years old.
We do get quite a few increase, because there's substantial interest. It doesn't always make economic sense. People don't always have the resources that they need to get it done. And we've had a lack of clarity on whether or not they could do things, and we've asked them to be patient, let us get this in place, so they know exactly what they can build. As land values increase, as there's pressure regionally to not consume ag land, which is going to further drive up land cost, there will be more interest. And we do have areas throughout the community that have large lots, that are affordable areas with large lots. Some of them have alley access. We'll get a few. Just be a wild guess if I say maybe we'll see 5 to 10 a year. And from a community development perspective, that could be a good thing. They're going to pay impact fees. They're going to pay school fees. They're going to pay all the fees associated with building a home elsewhere. So it is an efficient development, an efficient way to get units built without laying down new infrastructure, extending infrastructure on the fringe of the community. You've got an opportunity over time to get a few more units. Right now, the development cost of putting together raw land is what's stalled development. There's nobody out there looking to build new subdivisions. So if there's an opportunity to do something without land cost, does it now make economic sense?
Well, this was imposed by state legislature because of the fact that they don't feel there's enough affordable housing, and I think they were anticipating baby boomers coming around, that this would be a way that families could look after their elderly and for many years before having to go to the home. If I remember, this surfaced about 6 years ago because we talked about it at League of Cities conference in San Diego, probably about 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, I believe that was initiated in 2003, maybe 1866 or 2003.
So this state law is in place for both cities and counties?
For local government, yeah. So outside the city limits in the county, the zoning isn't residential, it's zoned agriculture. So they may not have the same kind of challenges. I don't know what the rules are for what kind of homes you could build on AE or AL20 zoning, but that's what's just outside our city limits surrounding us. In the unincorporated communities, these kinds of things are probably being applied by Fresno County.
asked on that is I saw a story in the paper probably 6 or 8 months ago about a company down in Texas that was taking these storage units. Metal storage units.
Sea trains,
and they could make one into what it was habitable for 4 people, kitchen, living area, the whole thing, I think they said for $8,000. Which is certainly better than I see some people living in out in Traver. Mm-hmm. See, this kind of an ordinance would help a place like Traver where I got an older lady there that I've been helping. Mm-hmm. She lives on a lot that's probably 100 by 150 deep. She's got lots of room. I mean, she could put a couple of those units in there and generate a little income, help people out who need some housing.
Affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. So for some areas like that, it'd be really a...
And in Traver, it'd probably, C-Train would kind of maybe be compatible with the other houses.
Well, it'd look better in some of them, and it'd certainly be more...
Sad to say. Yeah, more solid.
And certainly more solid than some.
Leak-proof.
And if they're set up nicely and painted nicely, they can be made look pretty good, too.
I saw that same article.
This isn't going to permit that, but...
No, I wouldn't want that in a town like Reedley, but in a rural area, it might be quite appropriate. Okay, any other questions, commissioners?
Do we have 2 pieces we need to vote on?
Yeah, looks like we got...
You have 1 resolution to vote on.
Just 1 resolution, 2009-4. Any further questions or comments?
And then the exhibit is the ordinance that goes before the council then?
Correct.
So we're just recommending.
You're taking action on a resolution that's recommending that the city council
approve that.
Adopt ordinance number
2009-4.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I'll make the initiative, Chairman Nord, to move for approval of resolution number 2009-4.
Is there a second?
I will second.
Got a second from Jason. Any further comments or questions? Call for the vote, please.
Commissioner Clements?
Yes.
Chavez?
Yes.
Chairman Nord?
Yes. Okay, that takes care of this time's business, except for any comments or reports. Sometimes the shortest part of the meeting, sometimes the most interesting part of the meeting, you never know. Any action going on out there, David, you can tell us about that?
Walgreens is nearing completion. Hopefully they'll announce when they're going to open pretty soon. If they haven't done that already, I'm just not aware of when that is. I believe Radio Shack is occupied on High Street. We received tenant improvements for Subway, so they'll be moving over there also in that same building. We issued building permits for 16 multifamily units to Aquarian Corporation on the south end of East Avenue. And if you looked through your building reports, we're at 51 new home starts through, I believe, June. I think we had, I don't have the number for July off the top of my head. I know we just issued 3 new home starts for Lennar this month. So our new home construction is pretty healthy given what's going on in surrounding communities. It's fairly healthy based on our own history, because we've had years where we've done 15 and 20 and 30.
That's self-help help this out a lot, isn't it?
Self-help is 44 units. They're 33
underway
into probably. It. They've got 11 more that they'll pull eventually, probably within this calendar year.
Good.
So our new home starts are pretty healthy. Our biggest year during the boom is right around 200. But again, we've had years that were 15 and 20 and 25.
And for being a bust year, so this is pretty good.
Without self-help, though, we'd be in that kind of number.
We'd probably wind up with about 30 for the year. I'm anticipating maybe 80 on the year, and half of those will be self-help, so 30 to 40 otherwise.
It's nice to see them going up out there, and they're working hard on those places. There's going to be a pride of ownership that is nice to see.
Well, I think the exponent's done a good job of reporting what self-help does. I believe there was an article in there this week. Drive over to the first project on Haney and Myrtle area, and I think they're a healthy addition to the neighborhood. Their owner occupancy seems to be the key to property maintenance. There's the pride of ownership that causes that. So I think that's a healthy subdivision. All of them look great. They are a little more distinctive than tract homes because they're a little more personalized. Mm-hmm. And I expect to see the same thing with the units that are being built in Orchard 2. And they've been I think self-help has done a good job in Reedley. They've got a healthy track record. And I think that helps with community support and the community embracing their projects in town. It's good to work with people that have a track record here. And,
right.
And you know what you're going to get.
You know, self-help, I just learned this a few months ago, self-help also builds multifamily stuff.
They do, and staff has met with them, talked to them about potential projects. What we've talked about on occasion is they don't have formal agreements with communities where you can project out what you're going to do, and I think that might be something that we'd like to talk to them about. So we'll get that in front of the council, talk to self-help about what their intent is over the years. They go from opportunity to opportunity, but what some local governments might be able to do is have more stability and predictability with their redevelopment agency revenue. With 20% set aside for affordable housing, we can project what that revenue is going to be over the next 5 to 10 years and talk about, so what can we do incrementally instead of getting a big project and build it in a couple of years and then go a decade without something happening and then another big project. What can we do to build in some predictability? Again, I like seeing that 80 new home starts, and I'd like to see that year after year. Mm-hmm. 21 year and 150 the next year is not as healthy. Reedley is a stable, conservative community, and I think that's what we need to strive for maintaining. Modest growth, modest predictable growth is what seems to work well for.
How about foreclosures? How are we doing on foreclosures? Do you have any idea how many?
Last number
there?
I heard, somewhere like 35 range. I haven't heard anything recently.
I got one next door to me that was up for auction today.
And that's 35 is it's unfortunate, but that's a really low number compared to communities our size.
Yeah.
We're talking hundreds in similar sized communities.
You say think there are 35 at this point?
At one point there was 35. That's a number that constantly changes. They're getting bought and sold all the time. That was the highest, maybe 37 was the highest number I heard at any one time. Could be worse. I haven't heard an update.
Sad to see some of those brown lawns and so forth, like down in the Lanier Estates. You can almost drive down the street and tell which ones are in foreclosure. It's the same way in Los Panos where my son's at.
Is there any accommodation for, let's say my next door is going into foreclosure and that's going to sit brown. Could the water be turned on that place to keep it green if I were to want to keep it green?
It could. It hasn't been as big an issue in Reedley as other communities, so we haven't had to scramble to come up with solutions. Now, you having a neighboring property that's in that state, it's a big concern to you. There are complications to that. Who's going to take responsibility if something goes wrong and damages the property? That's why it's not so simple to just for the city to turn the water on and let you take responsibility for watering the lawn.
There's a pipe to break inside.
And home floods and it's destroyed. Who's going to become responsible? But there are, it's a big issue with local government. There are communities that have solutions. And it's, while it hasn't been as big a problem in Reedley, it's probably something we should look into so we can deal with the ones that we do have.
How about giving me some credit on a water bill if I just run my hose over and do it?
Well, we'll look into what are the practical solutions.
Will you do that?
For that?
I think
yeah.
I'm going to have to face. Well, I mean, unless this one turns over more quickly than they usually do, we're going to have a brown one next to us, from what I can tell.
Sad.
We'll look at Klingenberg's, you know, and down where your daughter's, you know, in between our places. It's just brown. It's sad.
Did I hear that place sold?
It's got a sold sign on it, yeah. Oh, and there's a couple over on Huntsman.
Huntsman, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We'll look into what other communities are doing ordinance-wise to have solutions.
So
now, if we're metered, before we were metered, it wouldn't matter much. I could do it and take me off the meter.
you were saying, David, about querying, getting ready to pull apps on those. 16 is going to be the number for one end cap, or
correct?
Because I was going to say. All those end caps all the way down East Avenue need a good cleaning of the weeds. It's fire hazard.
There's an approved site plan on the four southernmost. So
okay.
The southernmost one is a temporary Pawnee Basin, and then the four parcels north of that on the ends. There's an approved site plan for 16 units on each. They pulled a building permit for the first 16. They are going to also pull a permit for grading and plumbing on the next 16 to do those at the same time for efficiency purposes. But build they'll build out the first 16 and then see how successful they are. They're all two-story.
Maybe they'll clean up the weeds because it's looking pretty shabby down there.
What's happening on the other, the low-income one that was up for hot debate a few months ago? Is EIR going on that or what?
Correct. They're nearing circulation of the draft EIR, which will have a 45-day comment period for public and other agencies to provide comments on. Then once that comment period closes, Quadnov is preparing the environmental impact report. They'll go through all of that, look for anything that jumps out that's new, address all the comments, and then we'll schedule for hearing before the Planning Commission and City Council.
It'll be back. Fresh and easy?
Fresh and easy. Building permit is approved and ready to be picked up whenever they're ready. Encouraging comments from them is that my last discussion with them was that they hadn't been given the go-ahead to start construction, but they haven't been told that they're not going to. So it's as encouraging as it could be. As soon as we know more, we'll let everybody know.
You know, they built that one in Fresno across from the Mukes home. And then the fence is still up, and it's sitting there. I heard they held off coming to the valley for a little bit because of the economy. But you see the trucks in the south part of the valley, like Bakersfield direction, coming over from L.A., so they must be booming down that way.
Well, if we corporately, as a community, encourage them to come, I mean, there were a lot of people on our side of town that are really looking forward to that place.
Yeah.
Is there a corporate address that we could send something to?
There should be. I'll see what I can find.
I mean, I don't want to. I just want to encourage them. I'm not ready to harass them yet. But my wife might be, but she'd sure love to have it on that side of town.
Anybody that's interested in doing that can contact us at City Hall, and we'll go through our application file, see what kind of contact information we have.
Can you email me something if you find something there? I'm not sure how big a groundswell we can generate, but maybe even something would encourage them to.
Doesn't let them know. Doesn't hurt to let them know that people are aware that they were going to build here, and they're anxious to see them.
It's a nice alternative.
Yeah. How about the bridge? What's work scheduled?
I don't know the scheduled date. I'm more in tune with certain parts of the project, and I understand that the mitigated negative declaration will be on an upcoming council agenda for adoption. So the phase of adopting the environmental review is going to be complete, and then I think from there they'll go out to either construction drawings if they're not already done, or out to bid for those. So it's progressing. Is that accurate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think they wanted to get it scheduled either, it's not on the 11th, it might be on the following city council meeting.
And our roundabout?
I
don't suppose
that environmental review is not scheduled yet, so it's maybe a step behind the bridge, but it's not as complicated a project, so it'll probably wind up occurring quicker. They've been working through right-of-way acquisition. I think all of that's, all or most of that's been addressed, so that's coming also.
Okay. Anything else, folks? Okay. And we'll call this meeting...